Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for TWiT's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Triangulation, episode 286, recorded Monday, February 13th, 2017. Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin. Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 200-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/TWiT. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you could print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology and get to spend some time with them. We call it Triangulation because there's three legs to this stool. There's me, there's our guest, and there's you. And if you're watching live, you can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv and participate by asking questions, making comments, doing the usual snarky thing. All of that is welcome. Our guest today is Chad Dawson. It's funny, I used to work with Chad Johnson. That's going to be a problem this show. Hi, Chad. He's at Double Fine, doublefine.com. And, of course, people love Double Fine. Of course, because of Psychonauts, which is Double Fine's big hit, which is now 10 years old, more than 10 years old.
Yeah, just over 10.
And then you worked on Brutal Legend, which
that's
is...
That's right. I came in 2006, started on that one. That's with Eddie Riggs and had Jack Black doing the voice of the character. Sort of a heavy metal adventure.
Love it.
It was fun, too.
Love it. Double Fine's amazing because it's for a small independent, it is the most prolific game company in the world. The number of things you guys do blows
me
away.
I think it stands out. I mean, this we have Psychonauts 2 coming up, and we did a Costume Quest 2, but for the most part, we do original titles and different genres.
Right.
Some companies will do, you know, a good shooting game, and they'll just keep repeating that formula over and over, right, or, you know, a good sports game.
Right.
We seem to go in a different direction with every title that we do. We try to keep the humor and the fun, lightheartedness in most of our games is kind of a running theme, but you know, obviously the art style and the type of game is different.
Many of the people at Double Fine, including your founder, came from LucasArts, and that would explain why last year you brought back Grim Fandango, which was much fun for me to see that again and play that. One of my favorite games.
It is. That's, I think, my favorite adventure of all time back in the days.
Really?
We're also coming up with a remaster on Full Throttle, which is sort of a biker-themed adventure game that came out after Grimm, I think, before, back in the day. That remaster is coming along, too, and looking really nice.
Nice. And very famous, of course, for your Kickstarter, which before Pebble was the most successful Kickstarter of all time and must have been the first time anybody crowdsourced a game. Now it's a commonplace.
Right. There'd been a few others, but I think ours was the first one to really kick off and, you know, get over the million dollar range. It was surprising. I remember when it first went off, we thought we were going to get a few hundred thousand. Our goal, I think, was 300,000 or 400,000. You know, we thought maybe in a few weeks we might get up to that level. And within the first day, it already broke a million in about 24 hours and just kept rolling after that. So it was really exciting. I think as developers, you feel so distanced from your fans sometimes where you put a game out, you just hear about it later. To see people responding to your idea immediately was it was a big boost for the team.
And we talked a lot about it at the time. And Double Fine Adventure, I think a lot of our listeners bought in. And, of course, it became Broken Age.
Right.
Which was a huge hit on iOS.
Yeah, it was neat to get it on different platforms. I think for all our titles, it was one of the most, as you say, prolific, you know, available on just about everything. But I think the touch version really works well.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk now about your project, your current project, which is almost at fruition.
Yes, it's almost done. It's in the can, to borrow a film term, but we're excited to get it out there.
So first, let's start with Psychonauts, so people understand what Psychonauts is.
Sure.
In fact, I'm playing the original Psychonauts, which is more than 10 years old now, and it's kind of a 3D platformer, right? We're at camp.
It is. You play as Raz. He's a 10-year-old kid who kind of escaped.
Just fell off the platform by Raz. Oh, here he comes.
There he is.
Yeah.
As you can see, it's what we call a platformer, which is, you know, running and jumping around. The camera kind of follows you from behind.
But it's an adventure, too, which is nice.
It is. It has a lot of dialogue. I think, you know, one of Tim, our head of our company, Tim Schaefer's kind of key elements is writing funny dialogue and characters.
Yep.
So a lot of it's sort of told in stories, little cutscenes like this in between your platforming and jumping around. And I think that's one of the things most people remember about the game is the unique characters and the unique voices behind them.
And that, I would say, if you had to characterize Double Fine, that would be it. Unique characters, unique voices, unique look, and really kind of innovative and interesting games. I mean, the whole idea is, you know, you're a warrior of the psyche, of the mind,
right,
with psychokinetic abilities.
And as you know, as it's shown, you go into the minds of other characters and kind of see things from their perspective.
Yeah,
you use telekinesis and pyrokinesis and all those kind of psychic superpower abilities to solve puzzles and kind of help your friends out.
It's fun. It's really fun. In fact, I'm a little late because I started playing it at home and I lost track of the time. And
it's fun to get into.
Crap.
It really is.
I got to talk to Chad. So the new project, and I think, wasn't there a Psychonauts 2? I think there was a Psychonauts 2 already, right?
It's not out yet.
Oh, it's coming.
We did another crowdfunding campaign, this time with Fig, to crowdfund Psychonauts 2. And I think it's coming in a couple years. I don't know if we've specified a release date, but it's still in development. It's in the early phases now, but it's coming along. And it's kind of this game, Rhombus of Ruin, fits in between the two. It's kind of a chapter that tells the story in between Psychonauts 1 and 2.
Well, and most interestingly, Rhombus to Ruin is a virtual reality game, a VR game. What platforms are you developing it for?
PlayStation VR.
Okay, good.
We've tried around with a few, but we partnered with Sony on this one, so it's coming out on PlayStation VR.
Although, you know, you often are multi-platform on your games. Psychonauts is on a lot of different platforms.
Yeah.
So I presume that the way you develop makes it possible at some point to port it over to other platforms.
We always try to write it so that you could, you know, run it on as many things as possible. Lots of times it sort of depends on who we partner with as far as which platforms we come up with. But it's always our goal to get it out to as many people in as many formats as we can.
Sure. All right. Well, I want to take a little break. When we come back, let's talk about the new Psychonauts because it's coming out next week, the 21st.
I believe so.
A week from tomorrow.
I believe so, yeah, 21st.
And reviewers already have copies. So you're done. The code is done, right? You can't change it.
Yeah, we can always come up with a patch. Obviously, you know, we always look to see if once it gets out in the hands of lots of people, they find things you didn't see with all your testing.
Yeah.
So you're always almost like at a fire department. You're on hand ready to come in and put out any fire that might happen and, you know, fix it. So it's a good experience for everybody. But we're pretty confident in this one. It's looking pretty good.
Nice. Well, I have so many questions because I think I know we're all interested in how this happens, how big the team is, what members of the team there are. And of course, VR gaming is a whole new sphere and how that's different from traditional 2D environments. So I have a lot of questions for our guests.
Shoot, I'm ready.
Chad Johnson is here and he is
awesome.
He's the lead. He's at Double Fine and he's the lead behind the new Double Fine, the new Psychonauts. What's the name of it again?
Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin.
In the Rhombus of Ruin.
That's right.
It sounds like math.
It does. There's definitely a few math jokes in there. We joke it's as dangerous as two Bermuda triangles back to back, which form a rhombus.
Which makes a rhombus.
Exactly.
I get it.
Right.
All right. Fun. We'll have more with Chad in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, the great folks at ZipRecruiter. More than a sponsor, they help us staff this place. And they have helped now so many people thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. So big or small, ZipRecruiter can help you do the hiring that you need to do. And it's so important. The person you hire can make or break your team. And I always think of a company as a team, right? And there's teams within teams. And the worst time for you, whatever the size of business, if you're the person doing the hiring, is when you're down a person, a member of the team, it's like you got somebody in the penalty box, and now you've got to win. You've got to find somebody great to replace them. This is why ZipRecruiter is so important, because it makes it easy. Let's assume, I think it's a safe assumption, that the right person, there is somebody out there who's going to be great. It's going to be great. It's going to so valuable to you. You're going to be so glad you hired him. But how do you find that person? Where are they? What job board are they on? What social sites do they read? How do you get your posting out to them? Well, that's the beauty of ZipRecruiter. With one click of the mouse at ZipRecruiter, you're going to be on 200-plus job boards and Twitter and Facebook, everywhere possible, so that you raise the likelihood that that right person's going to see your posting. And of course, as soon as I say that, people doing hiring go, oh, no, Leo, that means I'm going to get thousands of resumes. I don't want the emails. I don't want the phone calls. You won't get them, because all of the applicants, and you'll get them right away because they have a whole bunch of, you know, they're a job board themselves, so they have millions of current resumes on file right now. All of them will flow into the ZipRecruiter interface, which, and it's so sweet. First of all, they reformat all the resumes so they're easy for you to read. They're uniform. They give you the chance to screen people out with questionnaires, yes, no, multiple choice, even essay questions. And then once you've screened out the ones that just, you know, don't fit, you can go through the rest, rank them, and hire the right one fast. It is the most efficient way to hire. And frankly, more than efficient, it's the most effective way. No more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. No wonder so many companies, more than a million companies, use ZipRecruiter, including ours, including some of the biggest companies in the world. And I want you to try it free right now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of Triangulation. Chad Dawson is our guest. He's lead programmer on a brand new Psychonauts, The Rhombus of Ruin. And one of the, besides the fact that, you know, everybody loves Psychonauts, everybody loves Double Fine, the company. You guys have done so many indie classics, I think is the best way to describe this. And I'm really thrilled to see this is going to be a VR title, because how do you start from the beginning? Now, I know, Chad, you're a programmer, not a designer, right?
Right. A little bit of both on this project.
Okay. So I imagine designers have to think differently. Do programmers also have to think differently for VR?
You do. For programming, it's mostly about optimization. So with VR, you have to keep things running at a really high frame rate. Because it's coming into your eye and it's kind of fooling you into thinking it's reality, if you don't run at the frame rate high enough, your brain starts to get out of sync with your vision, and you start to get frame lag, you start to get sick. Even more than a regular game, your brain picks up on that. So unless you're running at a high frame rate, it's...
You know, I remember the first time I strapped on the Oculus Rift, I played Lucky's Adventure, which is a similar kind of 3D world platformer.
Right.
And those really can disorient you, because you're jumping and you're leaping and the world is moving around you.
For us, we wanted to keep the graphics looking as good as we can. We took the old game that you saw from 10 years ago, but we wanted to bring the graphics up to modern day graphics. So, but we wanted to keep the lighting, we wanted to keep the shadows, we wanted to keep, you know, all the facial features going on. It's a lot of graphics to try to pump out, but to keep that coming out at a high frame rate was a big challenge for our tech team.
And do you use a custom engine? Do you use somebody else's engine? How do you do that?
On this one, we're using the Unreal 4 engine. It's our company's first foray into that. We've built our own engines up a few times, but we thought we'd try out their engine on this one to see if we could get it out there fast. So it was really great.
Because you don't have to code a whole new engine. You can design to something.
You always have to adapt to a new one, but they've done a great job with lighting and the graphics on it. We are really pleased with how the visuals turned out.
You know, now that you say Unreal 4, I'm looking at the lighting, and it definitely, I bet you, somebody like you can look at a game and say, you can almost tell right away what engine they're using.
You can. I mean, every team has a artist and a lighting, you know, people who handle lighting direction, but I think the lighting on Unreal 4 really stands out as looking good.
Yeah. And the capability of the engine really determines what you're going to be able to do.
Right. Our graphics team always adds extensions to it. We did a bunch of things to try to make the graphics look sharper and a little bit better than sort of the stock flavor Unreal. But ultimately, you kind of start with that baseline and just build on top of it.
I've always been a fan of the Unreal Engine since day one. And I thought the Unreal 4 engine was very good. And so does it handle the 360-degree world? Or, I mean, it's designed to do that?
The guys at Epic, the people who make the Unreal Engine, have put in some support for VR. Obviously, there's a little bit more with every platform. If you're doing VR on Oculus or VR on PlayStation, it's a little bit different. They've tried to sort of unify that. So they definitely got us a jump start on getting into VR. But VR is a moving target. And when we started on this, the PlayStation VR had not even come out yet. So Wow. We were working with early prototypes. Obviously, we were testing it out on different VR devices that, you know, were a little bit more than shoestring and goggles that use string on, almost like Raz's goggles.
yeah, he's wearing goggles, isn't he?
And so it's great to see the technology finally out there in the hands of consumers. But as developing for it, it's bleeding edge for sure. Every few months, you're integrating in new code, new optimizations, and new changes to the hardware and firmware.
So
it's an exciting area.
From the artist's point of view, I mean, in the past, it's almost like, you know, movie animation, you know, cartooning. You're right. You're drawing in a 2D frame, and you're just mm-hmm. doing a drawing, and you're animating it. Now they're drawing in a 3D world. Is it easier to take people who have done 3D modeling and introduce them to this, or can somebody who's been working in 2D, are most of your artists 2D artists who have converted to VR?
Most are 3D. A lot of the games that we've come out with, you know, Brutal Legend and even Psychonauts are 3D, except for...
Oh, no kidding.
You're not really seeing them in 3D. You know, they're being created in 3D, but you're still seeing them on a screen.
Oh, so this is really not new. It's just now you can see it all.
Right. It is surprising your perspective is different. When we first started on this, we would make a room and think you'd go into it and it'd feel real small, like a small prison cell or something. But as soon as we put you into it, it felt like you were on a basketball court. And that sense of scale is very hard to determine just looking at your screen versus putting on the headset. So we gave all of our artists VR headsets, and they would do it on the computer first and then bring it into the headset and look around and then get changes and make changes to scale and scope. As you can see, the Psychonauts world is a pretty funky world. All the shapes are kind of a little bit wonky with twisted circles, and none of the lines are quite parallel. So trying to keep that look and feel while bringing it into VR was something that took a little adapting to. Eventually, we started to get the hang of it and create kind of a, you know, the same feel world that I think people going into this will feel the original game.
I would think the lack of straight lines would make it easier, but maybe not.
Well, it's interesting with VR. Anytime someone goes into it, their eyes try to adjust because you're going into a different world. You have to get a sense of where's the ground plane and where's the ceiling and where's the floor. Immediately in our game, you jump between the minds of different characters. So it's almost like you teleport to a new perspective. And the first thing your mind tries to do is sort of grasp, where am I? Am I up high? Am I down low?
Yeah.
So it's a little tricky sometimes with the twisted lines to see that. Here you can kind of see the floor we kept pretty straight, but the lines on the side are kind of warp around and stretch. So we had to try to find the right balance of that.
That's a sensible strategy. A flat floor immediately indicates, oh, this is something to stand on.
Right.
And it gives you
otherwise you
base.
Feel like you're on a slope or you're tilted.
Right.
It's really interesting in VR that, you know, subtle things like that, you're tricking your brain is what VR is all about. And it's such a, you know, real feeling experience. A little thing like that can throw you off.
So because it's a first-person game, when even the early Psychonauts, you had to design a space with something behind me to my left and to my right, because you don't know where the player is going to look. Even though it's on the 2D screen, you
That's
do
right.
end up designing the whole space.
Yeah, you really have to think that what's going to be behind you or what's going to be in front of you. In this game, we tried to keep stuff in front of you more because even with VR, some of the VR has you standing up and walking around, but we wanted this to be a more seated experience where you didn't have to turn around in your chair completely, you know, 180 and look behind you. So we tried to keep mostly interesting focus in front of you. Of course, we still had to build the stuff behind you. In this case, you know, you're looking at a character over there. You're going to go to her point of view, and she might see the stuff behind you from her point of view. So you still had to build it all.
That's why I would say PlayStation VR might be a little easier because it's a seated VR. It's intended to be a seated VR experience. If you had to do this for the Vive, you'd have to have you'd have to really allow people to walk around in it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We sort of tied it into the story in this a little bit. On the jet, Raz is in his seatbelt and can't get out of his seat because the seatbelt sign's on. Right. Later on, he gets captured and is kind of held captive. It really forces him to kind of leave his body and go through into the mind of somebody else he sees. And that ended up kind of being our navigation mechanic of getting around the world.
That's so good, because I've been in so many, like in the Vive, where, you know, you have to point the thing and you press the button and it sucks. It's like just moving is very difficult in these adventures.
Right.
So and we tried. I think that's smart what you did.
We tried out some moving. It started to make some of us a little bit sick. Everyone has a different threshold. But also the hand controllers. We tried out the pointer controls and found that that felt more like you were using a magic wand or you were using the Force or something. We wanted you to feel like you were mentally controlling thing with your mind.
So you don't use the move controllers in this game.
No, we use the gamepad so that you can press the buttons. But all you're looking, you do with your head. So you turn and look at something, and then you hold down a button on the controller, and you can pick it up. And then you turn your head to move it. And that simple act of turning your head to move it made it actually feel a little bit more like you were psychically moving it, as opposed to twisting your wrist and like aiming a laser pointer to move something around. So for us, it really worked with the fiction of the game because we wanted you to be a psychonaut, a psychic, in that sense. You know, going with just the controller instead of the move controllers worked better.
You know, it's so interesting. I mean, really, in a way, you couldn't have a better game for this environment, for the PlayStation VR environment.
It really mapped pretty well. Yeah. Initially, we were kind of wondering, do we keep it a platformer? Do we have you running and jumping? Or do we take it a little bit more like an adventure game puzzle? And we ended up going more adventure game, where it's a little bit more sedate, a little bit more thinking, a little bit more looking around and exploring, and found that that's what people like more in VR.
So we've covered, you know, what the designers had to do, and it's not so different than the way they were working. Do they use Maya? Right. What are they?
Yeah, our designers and artists, we use Maya to build up all the art. The Unreal Engine sort of has a design tool built in it for laying all the art into levels. Ah. So that's the side I worked on a little bit, along with some of the other people on my team. Audio and was interesting. It played a huge part in the game as well.
Well, that's something we were talking just on Saturday with the director of the first Academy Award nominated VR short, Pearl. And I hadn't really thought about this, but they spent a lot of energy recording in 360 in the actual environment, so that you forget that audio is really important to this experience. All the attention's on this visor, but really,
that's right.
The audio makes it big. If you turn your head, the audio has to move, right?
It's surprising how much your brain keys into that. We found that putting audio in 3D in a certain position would pull the person's eyes to it more than if we had a flashing light going on over there.
Clever.
So, like in that jet that you're in, we had someone rattle a cabinet in the back. And originally it was shaking around, and we put flashing lights on it. Nobody saw it. Until we added the sound and moved it over there, people would look at it. But additionally, we found that a lot of people don't put their headphones on correctly. They just throw it on left or right on either ear. But if you do that in VR, it can really mess with you throw your sense of perspective off. Everyone learned really quickly to put their headphones on, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is interesting. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about this. So each step of the way, do you have to bring in noobs, people who have not ever tried it, and put the thing on and watch them?
You do. And, you got to realize, even though VR has been out for a year or so now, still for a lot of people, it's going to be their first experience.
Yeah.
So for us, it's great to see someone put it on and try it for the first time, or to get some people who've been doing it for a year come back, and you can tell the sort of difference in expectations they bring to the game. But we've sort of designed this to be as friendly as possible. We want it to be something you can show your kids or your grandmother or anybody who might be interested in playing, rather than it being a super action-paced, firing guns, shooting down aliens thing. It's more of a look around and enjoy the story type of game.
Sony was smart. This is a really good title for the PlayStation VR as an introduction to VR. And I imagine the comfort level is pretty high. This is not there are games where you really can be very uncomfortable. This looks like it would be very soothing and comfortable.
It is. Right? That's, when we were looking at like how long does it take someone to play through the game, and we're looking at around 3 hours or so for the full experience. Yeah. Some people just like to sit there and chill, and look around and pick up pillows and
play with it.
Play with it. It's surprising how much of a sandbox, particularly first timers in VR, they're just kind of adjusting to the world, almost like you know, sitting here and picking up the magazine and trying to read it and playing around with everything, the more toys and things we could add and tools for people to just, you know, enjoy this goofy world, the better.
We noticed that with the Vive. I have that at home now when we introduce people. And even now, my 14-year-old, he'll play the office simulator because you can, you're just messing with stuff. So you're kind of, but what you're really doing is you're learning the environment, how to interact with the environment and stuff like that.
Right. You open a drawer, everyone's going to look down and see what was in that drawer or in that filing cabinet. It's fun.
Do you feel like we're really, I mean, this is a new medium, this VR gaming. This is, you're the earliest days. I mean, it'd be like George Melies, the early days of movie making. You're inventing this. What a privilege to get to do that.
It really is neat, and it's neat to see all the things people are trying. Every game that's coming out, every experience is kind of pushing it in different directions. You know, you think about the early days of film when it was a lot like a stage play, and they didn't move the camera, and then someone was like, oh, what if we moved the camera around, or what if we dollied it in, or, you know, tried different cuts? Every little thing someone tries adds to it. And you're right, it does very much feel like the early days. Lots of room for exploration, but even more excitement about what's going to be coming next.
How neat. We're talking to Chad Dawson. He's lead programmer of the new Psychonauts Rhombus of Ruin, which is 1 week out, and it's a PlayStation VR title. So that means you have a week if you don't have a PlayStation VR to go out and get one.
It's on pre-sale now, and we actually sort of bundled it. If you have never played the original Psychonauts, if you buy it pre-order, you get the original one. So it gives you a week to play the original one and catch up on the story.
That's great.
This one picks up right at the end of Psychonauts, so I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the final scene at the beginning of the end of Psychonauts, this one picks up just minutes after. And then it ties you right into Psychonauts 2 coming out in a few years. So it's a really nice sort of chapter in the middle that we weren't going to tell. We were just going to allude to before, but because we got to do this one in VR, it's a nice chance to tell that chapter.
Well, we have some very sophisticated geeks in the audience, and I know they're very interested in what is different for you as a programmer. We're going to talk about that in just a minute.
Sure thing.
Because we talked about the designer, the artist, the sound designer, but you're now working in a new world too, and I want to find out what that's like. But first, a word from our printer. If our printer could only talk, we are all in on the Epson EcoTank printer. I've been all in on Epson printers since the very beginning. I mean, I remember, I think it was my first printer was an Epson MX80. Remember the dot matrix?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think any geek says, you say Epson, they go, oh yeah, I had an Epson. Everybody's had an Epson, and I've had Epson photo printers. In fact, when I talked to professional photographers, I did a really great a trip to Tasmania with my friend Mikkel Olin and 12 of the best photographers in the world. They were all using Epson printers. That was the only printer at the time, this was a few years ago, that could do real black and white monochrome prints that looked as good as the kind of stuff Ansel Adams would do. They may still be. They've licked some of the most critical problems in monochromatic printing, metamerism and things like that. So these guys know printing. They created for their industrial big printers a technology that spits out 40 million nanoliter drops per second. It's their precision core engine. And now they've really merged that into these new printers, the EcoTank printers, the precision core engine. So you get crisp black and white text. I mean, super high res, vivid colors. You get two-sided printing if you want, which saves a lot on paper and saves trees. You get, there's no warm-up time. You get a document feeder. These are all-in-one printers in many cases. So you get the document feeder that really works, like a really work. Epson did that too. That's actually, they should get credit for that. They've finally created a document feeder that works. You take the staple out, you put a contract in, and whoop, it goes right through it. But the thing that's most exciting about these new Epson EcoTank printers is the ink, because it's cartridge-free printing, and it comes with up to 2 years of ink in the box. That's the ET4550 you're looking at. That we have one at home and one at work. I set them up, both of them. And, you get these bottles of ink and you fill up the tank. They come in the box and you get 11,000 black and white pages worth of printing, or 8,500 color pages. You get about equivalent of 50 ink cartridges up front. And then when it's time to go get ink in 2019, my friends, you'll save up to 80% with low-cost replacement bottles. And now those packs you see in the back, those are for the big work group printer. Those could do 20,000 pages in between reloads. I mean, these things, you gotta admire a company that says, yeah, I know the business model is you give away the printer and you make it up in cartridges. We're going to do something different. We're going to give people what they want. We're going to give them 2 years of ink in the box. The Epson EcoTank printers. Great printers with that great precision core technology. And you won't run out of ink again, at least not till 2019. Epson.com/EcoTank if you want to learn more. The 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. 2016 Innovation Awards honoree at CES. These are great printers. I love them. You're going to love them too. EPSON.com/EcoTank. Transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints. With the best combination of ease and value, the Epson EcoTank printers. And we thank Epson for their support. Epson, exceed your vision. Chad Dawson is our guest. He's lead programmer of a game that comes out next week. It's the return of the Psychonauts. It's a VR adventure on Sony PlayStation VR called The Rhombus of Ruin. And it's fun. It's suitable for all ages. It's challenging. It's a 3D platformer adventure with all of the Double Fine games, a great sense of humor and a great unique artistic look to it. I love it. I just love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Big fans of Double Fine. Always have been. Broken Age is mind-boggling. I mean, you guys...
It's a gorgeous game.
What's neat about Double Fine is it's not a traditional game studio. In fact, you have these... What were they called? Amnesia sessions?
We do. That's sort of our we call our game jam, where we take a break for a couple weeks. They call them amnesia because we're supposed to forget about the project you're working on, work on something different, and then forget about it and get back to what you were doing after 2 weeks. That's where the sort of the name Amnesia came up. But it's a 2 week game jam, which kind of gives you a little bit more time than a weekend to make something that actually works, that you can play through a little bit further.
And some of your games actually came out of those, right?
Yeah, Stacking, I believe, Iron Brigade, Once Upon a Monster, Costume Quest, all those came from our game jams, maybe a few others as well.
So cool.
It's great internally as a team for us to try out new ideas, but when they end up becoming real games, that's even better.
One of the things that tells you that Double Fine is not your usual game studio is that some of these games, not hits originally, kind of, you know, mediocre response, and then became beloved over time. I think Psychonauts might even qualify for that.
Right.
It shows that you're artists. You know, when a lot of movies don't succeed on opening weekend, but people come to them, they discover them, and years later, I was listening to an interview with Debbie Reynolds. She said Singing in the Rain was a flop, but but over time, people recognized what a great movie it was, and it became one of the best. In fact, one of the top 50 movies of all time, according to AFI. And I think that's somewhat true also of Double Fine stuff. Some of the games don't immediately take off because they're different. But over time, people have come to love these games.
Well, they all have a unique look and feel to them. I think when you see them, you can take something else in the genre and put it side by side. And you can say, oh, that game looks different. You know, here's five games that look the same. This Double Fine one looks different or stands out. And, you know, initially that can be a little shocking. People like a little bit more of the same. But over time, I think when you look back at most of the things you like, it's something that stood out. Maybe it was a little surprising at the time, but it sticks with you because it was different.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah.
We're a very artistically driven company.
Yeah.
Often a lot of our ideas start with paintings and drawings that our artists have made. And at the beginning of every project, we have sort of art jam where all the artists get together and create a huge amount of art. It's made for a lot of good art books if you're looking for any video game art books, because we have a huge supply of it. And we put it up on the walls and it inspires the whole team. And lots of times the games come out of those drawings.
I see.
As a programmer, some of the tricky thing as a programmer is you see this crazy drawing an artist made and you're like, how are we going to build that? But, you know, it's both a challenge and inspiring, I think. You know, you look at the stuff that's already out there and you're like, I know how to make that. Done it before, maybe.
Yeah.
But our artists come up with enough crazy things that we're always challenged.
So, and by the way, it's true in movies, too, that the ones that do well initially, the ones you can say, oh, this is just like, you know, that movie, only is a little different. And you go, oh, I get it. And it fits your preconceived notions. But to really do art, you have to do something unique and artistic. Tell me how this... First of all, how big is Double Fine? It feels like there must be hundreds of people there.
We've usually kept the size around 50. Sometimes it ramps up a little bit bigger. I think on Brutal Legend we got up to 80 or so. Sometimes a little bit smaller. We've shifted from doing like a huge one big project to smaller teams of about 5 to 15. On this one, Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin, our average team size was around 12 to 15.
Wow. And your turnaround time's faster. I mean, some of these AAA titles, it is like movie making. $100 million budgets, massive teams, years in the making.
Yeah, we do a mix. This project was about a year and a half start to finish, which is on the shorter side. Psychonauts 2 is a bit longer, 2 or 3 year project. And, you know, some of our other ones, our shortest one was when we were doing some mobile games, and some of those were as short as 6 months.
Wow. So tell me the process. So does it start with a writer? Where does this begin?
They start all over the place. Lots of times, generally one person will champion an idea. They'll put together what we call sort of a pitch. And it's sort of similar to a movie or a book pitch. It's five or six pages with some art in it, a treatment, a little bit about the gameplay, a little bit the direction it's going. Like I said, we're a pretty artistically driven company, so it will be accompanied usually by a lot of art, kind of showing what the look and feel of it's going to be. Sometimes we do those internally, and people pitch to Tim, our director, directly. Sometimes they come out of game jams. Sometimes someone will come to us externally and say, hey, we have this idea. Do you guys want to make it? Most of our stuff is internally generated, though. And a lot of it comes from Tim. He's such a creative guy. He has hundreds of books in his office of just ideas and sketches and games that maybe will be made sometime later. I think he has enough ideas that we could probably make games for 100 years.
He's kind of a legend. He spent a decade at LucasArts and then went out and started Double Fine. And Tim Schafer is kind of is considered, I think, by many. There are just a handful of people who are just kind of legendary in the business.
Yeah, he's really, you know, he doesn't come out with games, you know, quite as often. I mean, we come up with one, you know, every few years. But I'm always surprised when we do it how much thought he's put into the design behind it.
Yeah.
You know, characters and storylines and interweaving it. He has pages and pages to show you.
Yeah. Okay, so you got a treatment. So it is kind of like a pitch for a movie. You got an idea, a treatment. You've got sketches,
for look and feel. Lots of drawings.
Yeah.
Usually pretty early. Sometimes they'll do ones that are just look like a cartoon sketch, a real quick 30-second drawing an artist will do. Lots of times they'll work in visual ones as well, showing mood and lighting, color palettes, those type of things. You know, to give you a sense of feel. If you look at Broken Age, for instance, it has a lot of warm, painterly colors. Mm. That was sort of a look that one of our artists, Nathan Stapley, put together and, you know, really focused on some of his art style.
What is this scarcity? What is the hardest thing? Is it getting a good idea?
Lots of times it's turning a good idea into a good game.
Okay.
Plenty of things look good before you do it.
Yeah.
But with games, because they're so interactive, because there's so much back and forth with the player, it isn't until you get about halfway through that you're trying to figure out, is the gameplay fun? Is this going to be anything more than just something nice to look at? So that's the hardest thing. You're about halfway through and you realize you need to start wrapping it up. And you're just starting to find out where the game is fun.
Interesting.
And then you have another team starting up that wants the same people on your team. So, you're competing for resources a little bit on, how much time and effort do we put into it? That's the challenging part, I think. But the early stages are always the most fun, where you're kind of a little bit more pie in the sky and what could we make? And,
right.
Eventually you whittle it down to something manageable. But
it's always fun. Does Tim or is there somewhere like a philosophy of what makes a great game, something encoded in, it's written in stone? This is what we need. This is what a game consists of.
It depends on what you're doing. Like I said, we always try to do something a little different. So for us, it's always a little bit of discovery along the way through. We try to hit every type of genre from, an action multiplayer shooter game to a single person point and click adventure. So I don't think there's any set formula. Hopefully you find the soul of your game about, halfway through the project and you can go with it. Some games take a little longer. Some games sort of have it from the beginning. If you can get that sort of soul of the game as well as a team that also gels together, then hopefully you have a good product.
Yeah. That's what makes Double Fine so unusual. I mean, as you pointed out, most game studios, I think of Infinity Ward, they get a big hit and then they're just going to crank out, 18 versions, 18 sequels. And I imagine as a designer, as a programmer, that gets a little dull. And Double Fine just feels like this creative ferment and this willingness to try stuff and to take on challenges and to do things. I think there's a certain, I admire it. There's a certain courage to doing that.
There is. And now, you know, we're working with some other smaller teams because we've had some success. We're reaching out to other small indies. You just brought up the little Knights and Bikes things there. That's a small indie guy making making a game that we're trying to help other people make as well. We call it Double Fine Presents. And, you know, we try to partner with a few smaller guys and help them out as well. Just because we have experience now, it's hard to think that we're one of the veterans of the industry. But, you know, Double Fine's been around now almost 20 years.
And it's kind of amazing. I mean, BAFTA, you got a BAFTA award for best screenplay for Psychonauts. Tim Schafer did.
Right.
I mean, it's such a new art form, and yet I love it that BAFTA recognizes it as a screenplay.
It's some amazing work in it. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people think, you know, video games don't have very good writing in them. You know, traditionally, a lot of people just kind of wing it.
Yeah.
Tim is a strong writer, and even more so, he seeks out good voice talent.
Yes.
You know, the artists he's got in to come in and do the characters, we have them all back for Rhombus of Ruin, and I believe they're all coming back for Psychonauts 2 as well. And it's some of their favorite characters that they've ever done.
What stage do the voice artists come in?
Usually a little bit later. We knew with this one who we were kind of hoping to cast. There was a bit of a question. You know, some of them really aren't doing a lot of voice acting anymore. Been 10 years since the first game. Some of them we weren't sure we could get with a schedule. But usually they come in, you put the team's voices in beforehand, so I might voice a character in the game.
Oh, interesting. Because you know, animators need to work with dialogue, right? I mean, is it like a cartoon?
The earlier we can get the actual voices, the better.
Okay.
Luckily, our animators have worked with these characters and voices a little bit before in this game, so they were able to make some headway.
Okay.
But obviously the last bits, particularly the close-up facial stuff. That's one neat thing that we found in VR that was cool from the original game is that during normal gameplay, the sense of scale, you're right up next to another person. You can, you know, the adult characters have to bend over to talk to you, and you know, another child character can come right up and they're the same height. So you feel a little bit more like a kid. It's surprising if you're, you know, looking at it on your monitor, you don't get that as much, but as soon as you go in VR, immediately you feel smaller. And everyone's kind of played with these characters in the original game, but they were just movie characters on the screen. To be in this one and to see them close up and have them turn and look you in the eye, and if you move your head, their eyes track and look
you
in the
so
eye.
That's so cool.
That type of character interaction, you know, there's so many social cues that you get.
Yeah.
Lily might look you in the eye and then look down, and you actually feel like, oh, she's upset about something. And you don't really quite know why you're feeling that, but it's just because your body picks up on those social cues in VR.
How interesting. Well, this really is a brand new world you're working in.
It's exciting. I'm really excited to see where people go with characters. That's sort of a lot of games are just still spaceships or robots shooting things. We brought in a bunch of our characters and we had some neat ones to work with, but I was really surprised at how much connection you sort of had with other characters in the game. I think that opportunity for empathy with another character or kind of, you know, feeling out the scene a little bit is a lot of opportunity that you really haven't seen in other mediums as much.
It's different. I mean, if you're voice talent on The Simpsons, you've got a script just like a play, just like a movie. You read it beginning to end. Obviously, that's not how it works in a video game. Is it a script? Do you have just separate?
We do generate a script. It's similar. We typically, you know, we'll book a voice actor for a day of recording. Some of the stuff does play out like a movie script where it's some back and forth and it's sort of a pre-authored scene for
the
a minute.
Cutscenes are all scripted.
Cutscene, right.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot of interactive gameplay where the actor is just saying, oof, what's that? A book. That's on fire. You know, like pretty much responses. All the things you can do in the game, you want the characters to respond. Tim's really nice about setting up jokes or sort of one-liners between two characters. So you'll do something and Raz, your character, will say a line and some other character, you know, on the other part of the level will shout out at you a response. One of our trickiest things was actually trying to make that sound natural because you can hit the buttons on your controller as fast as you want. You would just be interrupting yourself and breaking the dialogue, and that's sort of a challenge with any type of interactive dialogue on kind of when do you interrupt yourself versus keep talking.
Yeah.
And VR even more so, and first person even more so, because you're trying to hear what they're saying, but you also want it to respond quickly when a player moves a controller or turns their head.
Wow. So as a programmer, now you're working with an engine. So in the case Psychonauts Rhombus of Ruin, you're not writing from scratch the routines that draw the voxels.
Exactly.
What are you doing?
Sure. Well, on the programming team, it's a little bit half and half. There's things that Unreal gives you, and drawing is one of those things. And then there's things that you need to add. Obviously, every game has specific stuff. All our dialogue stuff we had to add in on kind of how to manage who's talking and when they're talking, how you pick something up and the physics of how it moves with your telekinesis, how things look when they light on fire. Okay. A lot of our work is, like I said, is spent on making things run fast. So it might be taking something like something lights on fire, and as soon as you light it on fire, all those flame and smoke on the screen just makes the frame rate go to a crawl.
Right.
How do you make those draw faster so that they can keep the game running smoothly? Maybe you drop a few of the flames out, or you rescale the image, or you make it less transparent. You have to kind of pull out all your tricks as far as for making the performance run well.
But the engine gives you libraries and primitives, right?
So it gives you stuff like, I want to load this file off a disk. Oh. We just pretty much have to give it the file, and it, you know, can give it that. It also helps with a lot of the setup. There's a surprising amount of stuff that goes into games as far as, like, what if the player unplugs their controller during the middle of the game? Something has to pop up and tell them to plug it back in. Yeah. You know, you need to handle all those little things, and the engine gives you a little bit of that side.
But it doesn't say, here's how you draw a fireball here.
No, it has some things where you can set up fireballs and graphics and kind of particle system is what they call it, that you can pump into it. Yep. But as far as making that thing look good, that really relies on our artist and technical artist.
Interesting. So, yeah, so there's physics. There's a physics engine. There's particle engine. And you know the capabilities. And what do you write that in? I know, I think Brutal Hunger, I read, was in Lua, right? A Brutal Legend.
Yeah,
rather.
Brutal Legend was a mix of Lua, which is sort of a scripting language, and then C++, which is sort of our core for performance.
And I'm sure Unreal is written in C++.
It is. They added sort of a neat visual scripting language where you're kind of like making a flowchart of nodes and lines to hook up some basic logic as well. They call it blueprints. And we used a little bit of that for the design side, but a good bit was written in C++ for performance.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So you're really writing code at the same level as the Unreal Engine code.
Yep. You get in there and work it. I mean, anytime it's the trickiest bit for our team is we'd used our own engine for years. Anytime you shift over to someone else's engine, it's like learning a new language.
Yeah, right.
Kind of know what's behind it. You know, there's nouns and verbs and things, right. But a lot of it is kind of learning how to get your fingers in the pie and to make changes. So we definitely had to. We had a team of about 5 programmers working on it.
Do you end up writing higher level tools for yourself, Chad? I mean,
you do. You try to write tools that kind of, like I said, we added a lot of dialogue. We actually brought over our Brutal Legend, what we call our dialogue database, where all the lines of dialogue and recorded voice goes in, and we export that and bring that into Unreal. That's sort of an additional part that we added so that we could kind of work with our same tools. Our recording engineers and our, you know, voice managers, they were used to the old tools, so it was nice for them to have something familiar rather than something completely new, moving to a new engine.
When you're in the thick of it, are you spending most of your day writing code? What does your day look like?
It's a mix. For me, since I was lead on this project as well as lead programmer, I had to take on a lot of responsibilities of just playing through the game and meeting with everyone on the team, you know, checking in with them and seeing what's working and what's not. It's important on a game to have someone who's kind of in the game every day. So loading it up and playing it through and listening to make sure all the dialogue sounded right, checking out people's new stuff that went in. In addition to being lead programmer on it, I had to check in with the programmers on my team to see how their work was going. I'm lucky at Double Fine, we try to cultivate kind of a you're responsible for your own work thing. So generally, I'm not micromanaging them. Nice. It's generally I set their, you know, they're skilled programmers. I can set them on a task and check back with them later on the day and see how it's going.
Do you use some form of agile system, or is it waterfall?
We do.
It has to
it
be
is a little
agile,
bit
right?
more agile. There's something called Scrum that we kind of use, which is... Yeah. Loosely, we use some of the aspects of Scrum, but generally it's, you know, putting together ideas. We still have milestones. Typically, we would do like 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out.
Two-week sprints.
We expect to have that exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of it is self-driven. Certainly, when you get to the end of a project, it switches over to just fixing bugs, where you're not adding anything new. You're just saying, this was broken, this broke this.
Right.
can we fix this? And trying to get through as many of those as you can.
You probably have a still, I imagine, even though you're shipping, a bug list, right?
But you've we got it down pretty well on this one. I was actually pleased.
Nice.
It was nice. We took a little bit extra time than we originally planned on this one, and gave it an extra couple months to get all those little fine level bugs out. There's always some that you ship with that are kind of small, and you're like, well, maybe we'll fix it in a patch, or we'll save it later. But hopefully they're not things that anybody would notice.
No showstoppers.
No showstoppers, for sure.
That is, as rare as the game these days that you don't buy it and then install a massive patch before you play it.
Right? We do have a day one patch that I think just got approved, but okay. It's minor tweaks. It's little things like the character was saying this line a little bit too soon after this one, so it's better to pause for a beat. Or one of our graphics guys figured out how to make this one scene where if you set off all these explosions, the frame rate could drop a little bit faster, so that if someone happens to do that, it's rare cases, what you call edge cases,
right,
where it's not something you really think a regular player would experience, but 1 out of 100 might. But if you sell, 1,000 copies or 1,000,000 copies, there's going to be that 1 out of 100 guy, and you want to make sure it's a good game for them too.
It's a blessing and a curse. A movie, it's done. there's no, you can't edit it anymore once it goes to the theaters. You guys, game's never done, is it?
True. Luckily, with most of our games, we try to, they're kind of a finished thing when we put them out. Some of them we've looked at kind of, and it's a popular thing with games now where the developers just keep maintaining it. Years after the game came out, they're still coming out with updates and additional content and making fixes. It's sort of a neat formula to kind of do it that way. This game being a little bit more story driven, when it's done, that's pretty much it. If we fix things, it'll mostly be for performance or compatibility or bugs. Pretty much done.
I've heard from a lot of developers that I don't want to be undiplomatic because you're a partner, but sure, the Sony PlayStation can be difficult to develop for.
In the past, I think that's been the case. They've really made a lot of improvements for the PlayStation 4 that make it a little bit more compatible with, PC or other console development. The PlayStation 3 was tricky, and we did some games with that. It was tricky because it had what they called SPUs, which are kind of like CPUs, but multiple ones.
It was the cell processor.
Yeah, exactly. It was tricky to adapt your code to that. You could do it, and if you did it, great, but if you're trying to come out on 10 different platforms, you only have so much of your engineering time to spend on that. So that made it a little tricky. But the PlayStation 4 is much easier.
Does it still have to be threaded? Is it still concurrent code?
You still do multi-threaded. Obviously, the more that you can do, the better performance you can get.
Right.
But you don't have to write it different because it's kind of multi-threaded on the same CPU architecture.
Right.
So as long as you have threads, you can get it working. You don't have to worry about pushing memory between one CPU architecture and another.
Yikes. I didn't realize that the CPUs and the cells were that discrete. They had their own memory.
They managed it differently. Obviously, on PS4, they have a few different types of memory you can use if you need to access memory quickly or not. They call it, onion and garlic. I think they have weird code names for it. But nonetheless, it's easier to work with than the PS3. And we were able to get this game done in a short amount of time on it, so it was really, really nice.
Let me ask you a little bit about your tools. So do you write on PCs? Do you write on Macs? What are you coding on?
We use PCs for development. Sony ships what they call a dev kit, which is a really big version of the PS4. It looks like an old ham radio. It's they're kind of stylish in their dev kits compared to other ones.
Cool.
it has flip switches on it and, exposed ports on the back. It really looks like a hacker tool. They send those to you before the actual PlayStation comes out, and you develop on those. They have a bunch of access to them that you can't get with a normal PlayStation when you hook it to your PC, so you can debug on it and get inside any game that's running and see what's going on. It's really useful for our graphics programmers to kind of look and see what's slowing down the rendering. So we're on a PC. There you go.
Yeah, it does look like a ham radio. heat sinks on the left and right.
The front side has a bunch of little LED lights on it. They sit on our desk and prop up our monitors usually. But
so each person has one of those attached to a PC.
Exactly. And then with the PlayStation VR, you have that plugged into that as well. So you have the PlayStation headset and your VR set up.
Wow.
Mostly we use Visual Studio, Microsoft Visual Studio.
Okay.
with some plugins. Typically, we'll try to run and develop on the PC as much as we can for just general testing, and then deploy it, is what we call it, over to the PS4, where it kind of copies all the full files over and then run it on that to see how it looks.
Wow, that's interesting. So do you have a PS4 emulator on the PC?
Nope. If you can run it on PC. Most of the code generally works. Okay. We kind of develop the game so you can play it without a VR headset. You can just use your mouse and keyboard just for testing. And typically a lot of stuff you can look into. When I'm looking at dialogue timing, that's usually sufficient. Obviously, we want our artists going into VR as much as possible so they can kind of see how things are looking and as it warps around you. And obviously for gameplay, it's very different if you're moving things with your head than moving stuff with a sticks and a controller or a mouse. So we try to, you know, get it on the headset as much as possible. But we mix it up, a little bit of PC development, a little bit of on-platform.
Okay, now tell me about the user stories for your agile development. Is it scene by scene, like you said? Okay, we're going to work on Act 2, Scene 1, or is it okay? We got to do chairs now. Everybody's going to do chairs. How does that break down?
Usually, we kind of develop it up by levels.
Levels.
A certain level or portion of the game will have an artist on it, a gameplay programmer. You know, sometimes a designer,
that makes sense.
Maybe a handful of effects guys, and we tackle them kind of in different orders. So one level might be very early, what we call in white box format, where there's no artist on it, just a programmer has made a few white boxes on the screen, and you move around through that space. Once they get that basically working, then, you know, some artists come on, and then, you know, we'll make a bus or a jet or a plane or a bomber or something kind of fit those boxes and map the space. And then we'll get the character artist in. If the level has a unique artist, it might bring in a character artist, an animator. So typically we kind of do it level-based, where you have, you know, two or three going on at one time, one in early stages, one kind of wrapping up, and one kind of in the middle. And then you go through a few cycles of that. Once you get a level to where you think it's done, then you bring people in and you play test it, and then you come back a month later and start working on that level again, making all the changes you need. So it's kind of an iterative flow where you you split it up among different people.
That makes sense. And you said that because it's a virtual reality game, you have to pay particular attention to performance. I mean, performance is always going to be an issue, right?
Right. But usually with games, if the performance is bad, a lot of people won't even notice.
Right.
I think my dad plays games at like 5 frames a second and can't tell. a hardcore gamer will. Obviously, you know, younger gamers will pick up on a game's not running at 60 frames or not. But in VR, it will actually make you feel nauseous and sick for many people. You'll want to take the headset off after 5 minutes.
Right.
And nobody wants that, particularly someone's first VR experience. Yeah. You don't want them taking it off and saying, I'm not coming back to that. It made me sick. So it's really important to keep it running at a high frame rate. And a lot of games you'll see, they'll drop the graphics down. They'll just go with, flat shaded, no shadows, no lights. And that works great. A lot of the mobile VR does that kind of thing because their processors aren't even, as fast.
Right.
So it's really been a challenge to try to make a game look good, hopefully as good as regular games that you're comparing it to, and keep it running that fast in VR.
The PS4 VR is roughly what kind? I mean, is it equivalent to a NVIDIA GTX 980? Or I mean, it's not off the shelf.
Yeah, that's in the right ballpark.
Somewhere
I think
in there. Yeah.
It's really kind of hard. It's kind of apples and oranges a little bit to measure.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you can get a really souped up $3,000 PC with, you know, dual, you know, 1080 cards in it,
right,
and, you know, a high-end PC VR,
right,
and that's going to look better. You know, the PlayStation cost is around $400 PC.
Right.
So, for what they have and what they have, you know, what they made, I think it's a really good price performance ratio.
Most of what you do GPU bound?
Yes. Yes. Sometimes we'll get CPU bound if we're going a little bit crazy with the AI or the physics.
Okay.
But, it's mostly our graphics artists that are working on the optimizations.
Yeah. This is so fun to talk to you at that level, Chad. I hope you. I'm just fascinated.
No, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great to talk to someone who asks good technical questions.
Well, that's not super technical, but and I think our audience is curious too, and a lot of them saying, "How do I get in the business? Where do I?" So we'll talk a little bit about that too, and of course, I want to talk more about the new game because it's out in a week, and you're probably exhausted. You're like,
for some vacation. I think to take some time off. It's always funny because. You know, you're kind of sad sending a game out. You've worked on it for, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's almost like your children leaving the nest. You're sad to let it go, but then you're also excited about the new projects coming up too.
Do you read reviews?
Oh, those are tough, especially with the internet these days. Usually the reviews are okay, but the comments, you sometimes don't want to look at the comments section. You do. It's hard not to. You got to put up your shields a little bit.
Yeah.
But everyone has an opinion, and it's, you know, it's always good feedback to see what people like. Between all the, you know, negative comments you might see, there's one person that it made their day. You know, we'll hear from some people who've played our games and it's been their favorite game of all time that, you know, gave them hope when they were in a down place. And those type of heartwarming letters you get are worth all the bad reviews. So yeah, you read it all.
We'll take a little break. I want to talk more with our guest. It's great to have Chad Dawson here. He's the lead programmer of a brand new Double Fine titles coming out on the PlayStation VR next week. Although you can pre-order it now, so you probably should, and get the free Psychonauts so you can prepare. You can get to the end of Psychonauts and know what you're getting into with the new Psychonauts. Rhombus of Ruin. Oh, it looks like a lot of fun. We'll have more in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a home, if you're refining a home, you got to know that sometimes you feel like you're stepping back into the 19th century when you're getting that home loan. Man. 3 years ago, we bought our house that we're living in right now, and we thought, oh, this will be fast, take a week or so, you know, and we got a vacation in a month, but that should be fine. A month later, we're still in the loan process. They're still getting documents. We're getting on a cruise ship, and we're on a boat in the middle of the ocean trying to fax them stuff, and it was just horrible. But now, with Rocket Mortgage, I don't have to worry about that. I wish it had Rocket Mortgage back then. Rocket Mortgage comes from Quicken Loans. So first of all, that's a great start. You want a loan company that is trustworthy, that is reliable, that is, you know, going to give you great service before and after. And there's nobody better than Quicken Loans. If you go to quickenloans.com/triangulation, look at all those customer satisfaction awards from J.D. Power, both in origination and in service, year after year. That's because they're good. They're really good. They're now the number two mortgage lender in the country, and that's not by accident. But then I love it because Rocket Mortgage said, okay. I mean, Quicken Loans said, okay, but we want to serve the geek. We want to serve you guys. We don't want it to be a six-week process. We want you to be able to apply for a loan on your phone and get approved in minutes for a product that is tailored to your situation. We want you to be able to submit all the paperwork electronically. So no more riffling through old boxes in the attic. Your pay stubs, your bank statements, boom, you press a button and they're sent off. And it turns around, literally it turns around in minutes. You even get, it's because this is the, you know, the internet, modern times. You get to adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time. Play with sliders to make sure you get just the right loan for you. I'm telling you, this is the way you want to do it. Now, I know there's some people, mom and dad probably still want to go and meet the loan officer and go look at, bring in the papers. But for those of us who want to do it all online fast, we don't have time for that. We got Rocket Mortgage. It is awesome. A transparent online process straight out of the 21st century. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. Find out more. QuickenLoans.com/triangulation when it's time to buy or time to refi. Whoosh, take off. QuickenLoans.com/triangulation. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. QuickenLoans.com/triangulation. Chad Dawson is my guest on Triangulation today. Lead programmer of a brand new game coming out next week. Double Fine's Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin. And it's a PlayStation VR game. So what games did you play as a kid, Chad? Were you a gamer?
I grew up, I had an Apple II was probably my first real game system.
Chopper Command. What was that?
Exactly. And also sort of the old text adventures with the Zork and the Infocom games, Zork. I think was a big thing. Oh, I think, man. Ultima. Yep. I tended to go a bit more to the strategy games.
You didn't play the, what was the one with the Castle Wolfenstein with the...
I did, yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. SS, yeah.
8-bit speaker.
Yeah. I remember trying to make out what the voices were in that game.
What are they saying?
You couldn't really tell. No. Kaput, das ist kaput, or something like that. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, though, and I bet it must be fun for you as a game developer, because you know that there's kids growing up today who will think back 20 years and go, God, I never forget that Psychonauts. It was so, that was so much fun. That changed my life. You know that you're going to have that kind of impact.
It is. Yeah. You hope we get letters from some. I think when kids get into high school, their teachers usually still have them try to write a letter to some company that made something that they like, and we'll get a letter from a kid and,
so neat. You know,
telling the story when he played it. We have a wall in the back of our office that we pin those up on. And it's just a wall of hundreds of letters we've gotten from all over the place. That. And it's, if you're getting a little stressed out, just go back and read the wall. It's always nice.
So, did you want to be a game designer? Did you want to be a programmer?
I think so. Back when we had Apple II, I, kind of self-taught myself to program a little
basic,
bit.
Right? Apple Basic.
Yeah, right. And digging into it. It was neat that every computer kind of came with that back in the day. So, anybody could learn it. And even as a kid, I just, picked up a few books from the library and started working my way through it. And, I think I tried to make games back then, but they probably weren't very good. Eventually, when I went to school, I started going into artificial intelligence and robotics and did that a bit in grad school and kind of thought I was going down that path a little bit. But I got into doing games professionally in the late 90s and been doing it ever since. For me, it was a real fun change of pace from just doing all technical stuff. Some of the work I'd done in university and in academia was, very technical, math oriented. And that was fun, but I always loved working with artists and sound designers, and games are a unique mix coming from the technology side of, they make my code look really good and and sound really good and play really good. So it's that neat combination of disciplines, I think, that you find in game industry that's, for a technical person, is very nice.
And coding is a wonderful art and science and great fun. But I think writing code for an ATM machine is probably not nearly as much fun as writing code for something that is on the screen and is, people play with in a way that is very different than our experience of code in most of the rest of the world.
It is different. It's definitely nice to make something that, makes people smile.
It's art.
And to deliver it that sense.
Yeah.
I think any programmer, you look at it for a technical challenge and, games are changing. Every few years we have new consoles out. We have new graphics cards. We have new PCs and new game genres like, VR are being invented. So there's no shortage of technical challenges that we have to face. So you're definitely be challenged there. But it's great. Like I said, the collaboration of working with an artist and working with a sound designer and a designer and getting all those kind of pieces together where you're making their stuff run well and they're making your stuff look good. And then the finished thing is some fun thing people can play. It's a nice profession.
And it must be, you said, has it been a year and a half you've been working on this?
Right, yeah, just about a year and a half from early. At that stage, we didn't even have anything running. It was just an idea. Let's do Psychonauts and let's do VR. What would that look like? Sitting down in rooms and drawing on whiteboards and then starting to build it. So it's been a pretty quick project development, a little bit of trial by fire because it's the first time a lot of us have been using Unreal and first time any of us have done a real VR game. So and we hired half our staff on this project up during the project.
Wow.
So it's really been kind of a, as a studio, a challenge for us, but I'm happy with what we came up with.
Do you think your next game will be a VR game or are you going to brush the dust off and go back to the 2D world?
We don't have anything in VR announced. Obviously, we're always trying new ideas. Psychonauts 2 will be more traditional platformer. And, that one's sort of the next Psychonauts title out. We always have a few things in development. I'd love to do more VR. This felt like just touching the tip of the iceberg as far as what we can do. So
yeah. We'll
have to see what's next.
Yeah. How about augmented reality? Does that intrigue you at all? I mean, that's kind of a concomitant technology that a lot of people are saying is going to be really big.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've seen the stuff some people have done with the HoloLens, and the Google Glass, even some things like the Pokemon,
yeah,
game that came out, yeah, had a little bit of that feel.
Yeah.
I think it's trickier than VR. In VR, you create the whole world, so we can make it look good. With augmented reality, it's going to be really a while, I think, before the objects that you see the computer superimpose over the world actually look like they're really in the world.
This is
getting the lighting right
and
getting the scale right.
Somebody ported Portal to AR.
Yeah, look at that. That looks amazing.
I mean, and the companion cube rolls down the stairs. That's incredibly difficult to take a real world object you don't control and then map these 3D objects onto
it. That's awesome. And that's looking really good.
Yeah.
The technology is actually, coming along. I'd be curious to see what people see. I mean, I don't know, maybe someday we'll see people, just walking down the street
acting
with
weird
glasses on playing, but we never thought we'd see people walking around holding their phones in front of them, and we have that now, so
yeah,
who knows.
Yeah, we get used to it.
But I think the augmented reality can be pretty cool.
Hey, Chad, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Congratulations, you made it.
Thank you.
The long haul is over. The Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin is out on the 21st. If you don't have a PlayStation VR, run and get a PlayStation VR and get the pre-order, because you can do that now. And then play Psychonauts for the next week as you get ready for the release.
We're looking forward to seeing people play. It's great these days. People stream it on day one.
Right.
Will be streaming it on Twitch or something.
Do you like watching that? To watch people play your game on Twitch?
That's what I like to do. Skip reading the reviews
because
you don't know what they're going to say. And you just watch people play and laugh at all the jokes and hopefully laugh at the right time and enjoy the game. And that's what we found, sort of since people started doing streaming. And now it's built into the consoles. People just pretty much hit a button and sign up their Google or their Twitch account, and they're streaming it along.
It's so neat.
Developer, it's great to see, because then you're connecting really with a player.
Right.
There's no filter. It's second to second hearing them laugh and hearing them get frustrated or get a thing. And then you switch between them, and you can actually go in and type something to them. And I think as a gamer getting, contact from a developer, they have five people watching their stream, and you go out there and they're like, thanks for playing our game. They all light up. They're like,
oh,
wow.
I bet.
Someone made the game typing on
I
it.
I bet.
I think probably most all games coming out now, the developers are on there watching all the Twitch streams.
I didn't even think of that. That's like a playwright sneaking into the theater.
It is. You almost feel like you're spying on them, but it's great to see.
Yeah. What, is somebody already playing it? It looks like somebody's playing it.
This one's Psychonauts 1.
Original Psychonauts,
Someone's playing the original Psychonauts.
Somebody's doing it right now on Twitch.
Yeah, as a developer, you have play testers come in and play it, but even they tend to be a little bit, saying they like it and giving you compliments and things, particularly if they're fans.
Yeah.
But people are on Twitch, they'll say anything. They'll say the good and the bad. Yeah. They'll say they hate it. They'll laugh at a part where they got it wrong. And it's more of a raw experience, so it's always good to watch.
Really neat. Well, good luck with the launch. Where are you going? You're going to take time off? You're going to go on vacation?
Yeah, I hope so. Nothing exactly planned yet. Maybe I'll take some time off and play some video games.
Now, that's a busman's holiday. So typically you take a few weeks off and then you just start the next one? Is that kind of how it works?
Typically, yeah. We at least here, we always have stuff in development. One of our project leads has something going along that I'm eager to jump in and start helping with soon. So, yeah, we'll see what's next.
Fun. Double Fine's an amazing studio, really is. Prolific, creative, small, yet powerful. And I'm really thrilled to see what you're doing.
Yeah, we try. Hopefully we'll be around 20 years later.
I think so. Chad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We do Triangulation every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. If you want to tune in live, I'd love it if you do that, 1900 UTC. You can be on the stream, watch on YouTube live at youtube.com/twit, or watch on our website, twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv and be a part of the show. But if you can't do all of that, don't worry, because as with everything, on-demand audio and video is always available for every show. In this case, twit.tv/TRI online. Or subscribe and get a delivered to your phone or your device automatically every week. Because I think almost every week there's something pretty interesting, pretty unusual, pretty exciting to listen to on Triangulation. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.